Put the Lights Out and Cry by Blip Blot. Read by Penny. Chapter 1. When Steve's dad had thrown the job section of the newspaper in front of him a week after Starcourt had burnt to the ground, Steve had briefly thought he was joking. That thought didn't last more than a second before his father scolded him, saying, "If you aren't going to go off to college or be any use around the house, the least you can do is get off your lazy ass and get a job." Steve fought the urge to glare at his father as he picked up the Help Wanted ads. He'd argued for half a second that recuperating from full-bodied mental and physical trauma hardly warranted his laziness, but Harrington Sr. hadn't wanted to hear it. "A Harrington in motion stays in motion, Steve," he had said. "You need to keep moving or you'll be dead in the water." So with a black eye and the third consecutive concussion in 2 years, Steve had limped in front of Della's diner with a marked-up Help Wanted page and a wrinkled resume in hand. He stood outside the smudged glass doors and stared at the sun-bleached Help Wanted sign in the window. With a grimace on his face, he turned to look at Robin. She had claimed she needed to come with him for emotional support, but Steve was pretty sure she was just making sure he actually showed up. "It's quaint," she nods, turning to Steve. "Places like this are catnip for old ladies. They love this shit. They'll be way easier to deal with than bratty kids with complicated ice cream orders." She shoves her hands into the pockets of her jacket with a grin. A jacket that Steve's pretty sure is actually his. She must have stolen it from the trunk of the Beamer when he wasn't looking. It swamps her, hanging loose over her wiry frame. She's pulled her hair up into an approximation of a bun, some strands of hair escaping here and there. She's wearing jean shorts and dangly earrings that catch and shine in the sun. She's got band-aids slapped across her knees from when she ate shit falling off Steve's bed, and the same pair of beat-up Converse she had while working at Scoops. After they had been dismissed by the paramedics swarming the burnt corpse of the mall, they had set up camp in Steve's room and spent the next week in a perpetual sleepover. Steve's parents weren't home, so they had a full run of the house. They spent most of it watching movies, redressing their wounds, and comforting one another. Despite their friendship being sort of tentative and new, Steve can't remember a time in his life when he felt so completely known and supported. Sure, he woke up every night screaming about evil monsters made out of gooey people meat, but Robin was always right there at his side, holding his hand tightly in hers and wiping away the tears that tracked down his face. She would whisper quietly to him, assuring him that they had made it out and everyone was still safe. Only after that was he able to drift back to sleep. Maybe it was a little codependent, but Steve was taking the small wins where he could. He was glad she was here with him now. He had thought about skipping out on this interview and staying in bed until he couldn't tell what time of day it was anymore. But his dad had ruined that plan by coming back from his Bali vacation 2 weeks early and demanding Steve do something with his life. "You'll probably like it here better than stinky old family video anyways. Think of all the babes you could pick up here." Robin nudges him in the side with her elbow. "You're right, Rob. Nothing screams date me quite like coffee stains and the smell of bacon grease," Steve grumbles, picking at the healing scab on his lip before Robin smacks his hand away, scowling at him. "Stephen Bartholomew Harrington, you used to hit on girls all day long in a sailor costume. I'm struggling to see how this is worse." Robin scolds him as Steve scoffs and mouths "Bartholomew" in mock offence. "I was desperate, okay? At least I know now it'll be hard to pull off a sexy server outfit." He lifts his hand up to touch his mouth again, but stuffs it back in his pocket when Robin shoots him a look. "And my middle name isn't Bartholomew, it's Matthew." "Yeah, just like your dad, I know." Robin rolls her eyes and scoffs. "That's still the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Who gives their kid their same exact name? I mean, come on, 2 Stephen Matthew Harringtons? That's narcissistic serial killer behaviour." Steve shrugs in a way that indicates he neither agrees nor disagrees with the statement. It's hardly news that he hates sharing a name with his father. It doesn't help that he also looks like a carbon copy of him. He's lucky that he at least ended up with his mum's eyes. He doesn't think he'd be able to get out of bed in the morning if he had to look at a perfect replica of his father's face staring back at him through the mirror. The world sucks enough with one shitty Steve Harrington. He doesn't need two. Thinking about his dad makes Steve anxious all over again, adjusting the tightness of his tie before Robin tuts and moves to fix it. He'd wanted to go for something nice but casual, so he'd ended up with one of his older white button-up shirts with the sleeves rolled up to the elbows. He'd matched it with his nice dark blue slacks and a hideous tie Robin had picked out at the thrift store. She'd cackled loudly and run over with it, practically stuffing it in his face to point out the anchors and cutesy little sailboats all over it. "You'll never escape the nautical theme, Steve-o. It'll follow you to each job you have for the rest of your life until you die," Robin had said in a spooky voice, wiggling the tie to make it look like a hovering ghost. Steve had ended up buying it, comforted by the idea that even if Robin couldn't follow him into the interview, at least he had a small reminder of her with him. A gaudy good luck charm. Robin continued to fuss with his tie, standing in front of him and biting her lip nervously. She gives him a shaky smile and pats the tie down. "No one can resist the patented Harrington charm. They'll be hiring you on the spot and grovelling at your feet within 15 minutes. Steve watches her with a tired smile and just nods. When they got the news back that Robin had gotten the job at Family Video, but Steve hadn't, they were both heartbroken. Robin insisted she'd refused the offer, but Steve had talked her down, telling her she should take the job. She deserved something easy and boring after everything that had happened at Starcourt. The pay wasn't fantastic, but the local economy hadn't quite picked back up yet. Some of the local businesses were just reopening their doors after the mall had burned to the ground. There weren't a lot of places hiring new workers at the moment, focusing instead on the expenses of reopening a business in a building that had been left to rot for months on end. And, as dramatic as they were being, the Family Video was literally just across the street. Steve's pretty sure he'd be able to see Robin's gangly limbs through the large panel windows on a sunny enough day. They'd just gotten used to being attached at the hip, supporting each other through the summer when there was no one else around. So having to part now was a little nerve-wracking, even if it was just a strip of asphalt away. "I should probably head in." Steve takes a deep breath and nods towards the door. "My dad always says if you aren't 5 minutes early, you're late," he jokes. "Your dad's a prick," Robin replies, squinting as she picks off a piece of imaginary lint from Steve's shirt. "But you're probably right. No time like the present. Go get 'em, Tiger. I'll be waiting back at the car to hear all about it once you're done." Steve nods again and squares his shoulders and takes another slow, deep breath in before pushing through the door. He can hear Robin whooping and cheering behind him, and it dissipates some of the nerves in his stomach. A small set of bells clang above him as the door shuts behind him and he glances around, taking in the space. There's a radio that's on somewhere in the far back that's playing something from the 60s he doesn't recognise. It sounds like something his grandmother would play while cleaning the kitchen after a big holiday meal, and Steve sways to the rhythm of it. There's a counter with a register sat next to a dessert case, full of different types of pies. Steve leans down to look at the different handwritten notes next to each one. They range from simple flavours like cherry or blueberry, to more complicated things like lemon meringue or some monstrosity named the Triple Chocolate Decca Delight. His stomach grumbles as he scans over all of them and he places a hand over it lightly. He'd been too nervous to eat earlier, but it looks like skipping breakfast was coming back around to bite him in the ass. He grumbles to himself quietly about the hypocrisy of hunger making him nauseous before snapping his head up at the sound of a door opening. He can hear the clack of heels and two voices moving closer from what looks like the back of the restaurant. "And I told him, Ray. I said if he didn't like that, then he was more than welcome to..." "Oh!" A shorter man in his mid-50s rounded the corner, perking up with surprise once he notices Steve standing awkwardly in the doorway. "Well, look what the cat dragged in. You must be Steve." The man had a thick southern accent, but the sweet kind, like you'd hear southern belles speak in old cowboy movies. He stands a good 4 inches shorter below Steve's height, and that's even with the heeled cowboy boots he's wearing. Steve swore they had taller heels on them than any he'd ever seen his mother wear. He has an ascot tied neatly around his neck, a soft yellow colour to complement the light blue sweater he's wearing. The sweater looked handmade, chunky, and well-loved. He had laugh lines crinkled by his eyes, and he beamed as he walked up to Steve. Behind him came a taller man, drying his hands off with a dish rag. He was wearing a chef's coat and a stern look. "Yes, sir." Steve holds out his hand and clears his throat, glancing down to smile at the man before him. "You must be Bob Collier. We talked on the phone earlier. It's a pleasure to meet you." "Oh, please, call me Bobby." He beams up at Steve and shakes his hand enthusiastically. "Come on in. Please, take a seat here at the counter. I'll be right with you." Bobby pats the countertop before turning back to the man still standing in the doorway. "Ray, sweetheart, can you keep Stevie here company while I go grab the paperwork from the office? I forgot to grab it on my way in. I swear I'd lose my head if I didn't keep it screwed on so tight." He laughs at his own joke and pats the other man on the arm before quickly walking back the way he came in, the clacking of his boots growing quieter and quieter. Steve's eyebrows had shot up at the pet name, but he quickly schools his expression and sits down, smoothing out his slightly crumpled resume on the counter. The other man is still watching him closely, and Steve tries not to let his nerves show. Where Bobby is short, this man towers over both of them with forearms as thick as tree trunks. His hair is shaved down and the fade on the sides reminds Steve of the new look Lucas was starting to try out. His chef's coat looks worn but clean, and he had a scar cutting through his right eyebrow. He watches the man's gaze flicker over his face, stopping at his molted black eye. Steve shrinks into his shoulders and averts his gaze. Robin had tried for a good 30 minutes to cover it up with some cosmetics they found at the corner store, but it couldn't cover everything. His busted lip and swollen eye were part of the reason he didn't want to show up today. His appearance hardly screams trustworthy employee. It was more like frat boy who owed the mob money. Steve cracks his knuckles nervously and gives the man a tentative smile. It makes the cut on his lip sting, but he holds it. The man slowly raises an eyebrow and throws the dish rag over his shoulder. "You come here to cause trouble in my restaurant, boy." The man's voice is deep and heavy, like the air right before a thunderstorm. It makes Steve adjust his posture and sit up straight. "No, sir." He replies automatically, struggling to maintain eye contact with the man's steely gaze. "The men who gave you that black eye going to come in here and cause trouble?" The man gestures at Steve's face before crossing his arms, giving him a measured look. Images of the Russian general and soldiers flicker by Steve's eyes, but he blinks and they're gone. "No, sir," he says with a voice that sounds calmer than he feels. "I was working at Star Court when..." He tapers off and clears his throat. "When everything happened. That's where the black eye and split lip are from. No one's going to come in and cause trouble, I promise." The man's gaze softens minutely, and he gives a short nod. "Name's Ray," he says simply, before clapping a hand on Steve's shoulder and turning back to walk into the kitchen. Feeling like he had passed some kind of test, Steve continues to look around, spinning back and forth on the bar stool as he takes in some of the pictures hung up on the wall. There are framed pictures of various Hawkins High School championship games and signed portraits of baseball players. Hung behind the cash register in a gilded frame is a picture of a heavyset woman, gazing off to the side. It looks like a glamour shot taken sometime in the 1960s. She's not smiling, and there's not a single wrinkle on her blouse. She has a pearl necklace delicately draped around her neck that matches a set of earrings she's wearing. Steve thinks that if his father was a woman, he'd probably look similar. All stern looks and expensive clothes. That's my mama. Steve jumps and turns to see Bobby standing behind him, gazing up at her. He sits down next to Steve at the counter and smiles warmly, straightening his ascot and crossing his legs as he gets comfortable. It's a nice picture, Steve replies, unsure if it's inappropriate to compliment a man's mother 5 minutes into meeting him. She looks very put together. Steve winces internally at the semi-awkward phrasing, but it was the most polite way he could think of to say that she looked like she had a barbed stick up her ass. Bobby laughs, though, which Steve counts as a win. Oh, she most certainly was. Bobby looks up at the photo again and grins. Very proper, my mama. Quite the stickler for the rules. Had a penchant for discipline, but she did make a mean pineapple upside down cake. Steve's eyebrows twitch slightly at the words upside down, but he maintains his composure and nods along. She seems like a lovely woman, Steve says, trying to keep the sarcastic tone out of his voice. Does she manage the restaurant with you? Oh, honey, no, she's dead. Bobby laughs. It's a good thing, too, because she's hardly what I would call a lovely woman. Meaner than a viper and spat twice the amount of venom. Steve chuckles at the imagery and struggles again to not think of his father. Bobby leans in closer and slides Steve's resume across the counter to take a look at it. Now, Steve, let's see what we've got here. He whipped a pair of reading glasses out of his front pocket and balanced them delicately on his nose, holding the paper back a bit and squinting as he read. Oh, captain for both the swim team and the basketball team. Very impressive, Stephen. Steve nods along, sitting up straight again and subtly trying to wipe his sweaty palms off on his slacks. Bobby mumbles quietly to himself as he skims the rest of the paper, pausing once he reaches the bottom. He glances up at Steve and then back down at the paper. Scoops ahoy? Honey, wasn't that at the mall they had off the freeway? Steve nods quickly and clears his throat. Yes, sir. Right off of I-96. Scoops Ahoy was the ice cream parlour in the food court there. I figured slinging ice cream and slinging hash browns couldn't be that different. He goes for a charming smile, but it falls flat as Bobby stares back with concern flooding his features. Sweetheart, that mall burned down 3 weeks ago. Bobby places the resume back down on the counter and frowns. Don't tell me that's where you got that shiner and busted lip. Steve shrugs a little helplessly and struggles to find an appropriate response. The food court was pretty deep in the mall. My co-worker and I had a hell of a time getting out. Steve brushes his hand up to lightly graze his fingertips across the ridge of his eye socket, wincing as he brushed against the bruising there. There was a rush to get out and I got knocked to the ground trying to protect her. That was the cover story the government had settled on. A fire breaking out and people getting caught in a stampede. It was believable with the amount of damage done to the mall and the large loss of life surrounding it. Robin insisted that they incorporate Steve's bravery and stupidity into the story somehow, and Steve had been too tired to fight her on it. Bobby's lips pressed into a thin line as he listened, his eyebrows furrowing, and the grip of his other hand folded over his knees tightening as Steve finished explaining that he had been discharged with a concussion and small facial fracture for his efforts, but was otherwise okay. Sweetheart, don't take this the wrong way, but if all this happened, then why the hell are you here and not at home resting up? Bobby's voice was laced with concern and his expression was tense. My dad says a man in motion stays in motion, sir. Steve glances down at the counter, unable to hold Bobby's worried gaze. But I'm pretty sure he was just sick of seeing me lounge around the house. I was getting restless anyways. There's only so much bed rest I can handle. Your daddy's the one pushing you to work? Bobby leans back and narrows his eyes slightly. Yes and no, sir. Steve wrings his hands out nervously, resting his elbows on his thighs. Like I said, I was getting restless. It helps if my hands are busy, and I figured I could get plenty of that here. Bobby hums in affirmation and drums his fingers against his knees for a moment before nodding once. Well, while I disagree with the idea of healing from head trauma as lounging, I do understand the need to keep one's hands busy. Idle hands are the devil's playthings, so they say. He shoots Steve a grin, which Steve returns easily. With that in mind, I'd love to offer you the job. Bobby's smile widens as Steve lights up. He pulls some folded papers out of his back pocket and points them sternly at him. But only if you promise me that you will tell me or Ray the instant you start feeling like you need a break. You understand me? Your daddy might not care about how that head of yours is feeling, but I certainly do. And the last thing I want is you working yourself to literal death. Bobby fixes him with a stern stare. Steve can't stop the grin from spreading across his face as he stands up and shakes Bobby's hand excitedly. I promise you'll be the first one I tell if I need a break. Thank you so much, Mr. Collier. I thought I told you to call me Bobby, young man. Mr. Collier makes me sound like some sort of old state senator. Bobby scolds him, but shakes his hand back with just as much enthusiasm. You start Monday, 6 a.m. sharp. I'm going to have one of the girls show you all the ropes. Make sure you show up in black slacks and a black cotton t-shirt. That's the uniform around here. Also, make sure you invest in some comfortable shoes. You're going to be on your feet for long periods of time. And nothing's worse than serving in shoes without arch support. Steve scrambles to take the papers from him, using a pen on the counter to jot down everything Bobby had said. He opens the packet to sign the remaining paperwork confirming his employment before handing Bobby back his own copy of the signed documents. Bobby beams at him as he tucks the paper into his back pocket for safekeeping and claps his hands together. Now, this calls for a celebration. Who wants pie?